Warning. This story includes materials that are classified your ears only due to disturbing content. Other times we are quite silly and really just a hoot. Unless you are cleared for graphic depictions of sex, violence, or dirty words, this never happened. We were never here. It should go without saying that this is not intended for kids, but we're still saying it for their sake and for yours. We don't always play nice. You've been warned.
You've been sent here to locate the hostile personality. Manifestation of the subject's repressed urges. We use a special property of the fissure beneath Blue City called the Lacuna to erase these urges and...
You deserved it.
Everyone is briefed before our mission.
Let's say, hypothetically, you had orders to do something you think is incredibly dangerous and stupid.
But you forgot most of it.
Static. That's about all we know.
You sound lost, Agent. Strange events, meetings with specific personalities and the like are referred to as escalations.
Yes, it's bad.
Like a chess game.
Static is bad. That's what static is.
Unfortunately, we're not sure what the pieces do or how to play in any meaningful capacity.
Badness.
Things can get out of hand fast.
I will make your life intolerably painful.
The conflict. Some kind of ongoing war.
Blue City is beautiful.
Embedded spies.
In the way noir films and dusty cathedrals are beautiful.
A series of bombings.
Even the most colorful things are drab and pasty.
It stays that way.
The sky above.
Passers-by are dressed formally in styles decades behind the time.
Citizens avoid talking about the Spider-Man.
Even the cutting edge of fashion here comprises old suits and dresses.
Once they're on you, there's no shaking them.
Haven't been seen since 1985.
Either you dispatch of the HP or you eject before you end up dead.
Snyder marches over to the workstation and grabs a small black microphone. Sorry to interrupt, agents. This is Control. You've got too much static on the line. Chaffer, we've got you in the Heights. Please connect with your team at the zoo. I repeat, reconvene at the zoo. It's going to get hairy and I need you all together. And Chaffer, reel in Seals. I'm not sure what he's doing or who he's talking to, but I don't like it. The room contorts. Dimension and aspect melting all around the unseeing occupants. A network of thick, syrupy lines of black static spray out from the center of the circle, thinning before pulling tight into hazy threads that intersect between this place and another. Snyder flinches but remains in place. With a slight crane of his neck, he looks around, holding back another shutter. Reaching inside of his jacket, he rounds for a moment but decides not to pull anything out. Perhaps to cover his action, he checks his watch, pretending not to see like the others. Suddenly, Tucker begins to seize violently. The straps hold him down but look barely up to the task, as if Tucker is not shaking, but the very ground itself is trying to push him up and away. Somehow, his arm partially breaks free and it's flung this way and that from the elbow down. Tucker's hand moves erratically, almost as if trying to form some kind of gesture, but approximate none that anybody would recognize as meaningful or deliberate, much less understandable. The medic springs to his feet, barreling through the gaggle of panicking technicians, barking orders at everyone around him. After clearing any equipment within reach of Agent Tucker, he calmly walks around, letting Tucker continue to heave unabated as he makes his way to the IV. In a calm, practiced manner, he begins administering a cocktail of medications. A security guard in partial riot gear has entered the room, with an electrified baton at ready. "No need," Snyder says, dismissively waving off the guard. "Dr. Mender, we've got to keep him there. If he's contacted a node, he'll have to pull himself out of it. If she..." He pauses, correcting himself. If it tries to come through, I'll have to destroy the terminal. This isn't a terminal, a subject, or even an agent. This is a human being. For love of God, Snyder, why would you send anyone to the exhibit if you knew this was going to happen? The medic says, unceasing in his work. Look, I tell him not to go to her if I could, but I can't. You know as well as I do that a call's no good at wine level. Might as well call the authorities ourselves. He said it would cause feedback if we gave agents any info on the lady in blue before sending them in. As Tucker continues to buck and shake, the medic's stern eyes dig into Snyder. He's not going to last much longer, he says, obviously frustrated. Snyder, for his part, watches dispassionately. Snyder looks over at the desk he's been using to call the agents a split second before white noise pours out of the speaker.
Control.
You can't hear me.
No, I'm not supposed to be. Got the device from Cassandra, and I idea if it fell back into her hands. I don't need want to eject me right now, but I want this device to you as fast as possible. Beam it out of my pocket or something. I don't know what to do.
Hurried steps move him over to the desk. He swipes the microphone again. Not sure what the shit is going on over there, agent. Nobody except for you mystery agents is cleared to carry a Lacuna device, no matter the circumstances. You're married to that thing until death do you part. You cannot, I repeat, you cannot send it back any other way than in person. It is not safe with the courier. It must be taken back to the waiting room. I repeat, you can only bring it back in person. It cannot bring any of you through, especially not Seals due to his condition. Take action or you escalate. Repeat, take action or escalate. Take action or escalate. Take action or escalate. The technician overseeing the station pipes in. Sir, the directorate has been observing. They're sending a priority override for Agent Seals. We're supposed to give him what he wants. Fire a message back to him with my name on it. No dice. We literally can't. It's part of how the device is designed. I'm not sure exactly what we can do, he says, picking up the microphone again. Seals, is that you? You've got the directorate breathing down my neck now. Congratulations. I still can't give you what you want. Describe the situation. Repeat. Describe the situation. Tucker's body goes limp. The medic seems somewhat relieved but continues to work, his brow furrowed with concern. This guy's definitely going to have brain damage, he mutters.
The streets are conspicuously empty. In the distance, a crowd has gathered. Tucker finds himself back in the streets, not entirely sure how he arrived there. The HP. He runs back to the zoo as fast as he can. As Tucker arrives back at the zoo, he looks around, trying to figure out what's going on. Tucker is met with a wall of personalities blocking the progress of he and his associates. The streets are swarming with people. A human barricade prevents him from going towards the main entrance of the zoo where Shields and Barker have congregated, or making it to Seals and Chaffer, who are currently blocked in the hallway. A woman in a gold dress and an ornate golden mask bobs along in the middle of the crowd. So far, they only block the agent from entering further into the scene, and he is not currently surrounded. Hand up the phone, Seals, says Chaffer, peering over his shoulder at the amorphous crowd. The way I see it, we've got two choices. We can get the hell out of here, or we can try to reconnect with the rest of the crew and leave at the same time. I feel obligated to trying to help the rest of them as much as possible, but my heart feels like it is going to shatter my sternum. So I need to be careful. I don't want the Domingos to take their anger out on one of them. The phone says,
God damn. Like minor. Can't see. Escalate. Escalate. Keep getting sicker, so let them have it. Things like this have happened before.
You want me to end them? Says Chaffer. Seals grits his teeth, looking at the crowd as he tightens his grip on his gun. What the hell does escalate even mean? He asks to no one in particular, then just starts shooting into the air to try to scare the sea of personalities into separating a bit. In such large number, they're effective.
There's at least one way SEALs can think of to thin their numbers, but it would pose certain moral implications. The gun fires, but does not appear to expend ammunition. In the muzzle flash, he can see how dull the personalities' eyes are, how sluggish their movements. The voice on the line says,
"Harm the personalities, it will not go well for you. Avoid direct. Tell SEALs to about all of the food being poisoned. And smell the pretty flowers. That's an order."
Barker turns from Javier and into the crowd, snatching the sword as he goes. He leans forward, taking a breath, and plunges through the riot of limbs and bodies, trying to make his way towards Cassandra. In his close contact with the people in the crowd, Barker realizes just how many of them are sweaty, feverish, weak, and uneasy on their feet. Barker bypasses the delirious personalities with supreme physicality, easily depositing himself in front of Cassandra. "You," he says accusingly. "Been back to the house, have you? I see you found your button." She softens some, pulling down the mask to hint at a cute but impish face. "You look so dapper in your suit, sir," she says, eyelids fluttering. For Barker, a very ugly, painful memory is threatening to surface. That look. She had that same look on her face when... Barker hesitates, a nagging gnawing at the back of his memories. He ignores it momentarily and addresses Cassandra. "Yes, a button, which you are not privy to know the details of." He gestures to the throng around him, becoming forceful. "Call them off, Cassandra. We'd be stupid to think you're not related to their actions. We have work to do, and we have no time for this. Make it quick, and we can be on our way, and not have to worry about taking further action to make this smoother." He tries not to actively address their past so as not to be at a disadvantage. He takes a moment to try and remember something. The memory bubbles and roils, threatening to rise to the surface, but ultimately sinks back down into Barker's subconscious again. He's left feeling small, scared, and deeply, personally hurt by whatever she has done to him. Even in this minor, personal failure, Barker appears to have triggered another interval. 18 now. Through the skylight, he sees the clouds melt together, like hot plastic or wet cotton candy, and greenish-yellow lightning dances between their deformed upper atmospheric bodies. A distant thunder booms. Chaffer cranes his neck towards SEALs and says, "Control wants you to know that all the food has been poisoned. Something about smelling the pretty flowers." He shrugs his bony shoulders and peers back into the crowd. "I have no idea what to do, SEALs. Control forbade me from killing the Domingos. What we need, above all else, is consensus. I think we should try to round up the rest of the herd and figure out what in the bloody hell to do next." "Got it," SEALs responds to Chaffer, though it seems to be merely an afterthought. Another shot into the air, then another. But those last couple shots weren't for the purpose of intimidation. He, in a grim fascination, just wanted to get a couple more looks at the eyes of the swarming personalities. The grim fascination unsettles him further as he notices his efforts didn't make a single one of the personalities even flinch. He lowers the gun to his side. "Chaffer, I've got nothing," Seal says, the weakening of his resolve obvious in his voice. Tucker yells deeper into the zoo. "Barker! Shields! Secondary is complete! Primary is a go!" Barker's watch is pulsing now, painfully slapping against him as it attains its 19th interval upon Seals' failed attempt to breach the crowd. Haggard, pale, and trembling, the personalities collapse in large numbers. Some fall over, retching, while others pass out or hit the ground, seizing violently before going limp. Less than half now remain unsteadily on their feet. With so few people left, the agents find that they can easily circumnavigate the sickened stragglers. Cassandra addresses Barker. "It appears to have taken care of itself," she says, somewhat aghast. She lowers the mask. "I suppose this won't do me much good now. Well there, agent. You've won. I'm not sure how you did this, or why, but neither my husband nor I have any further quarrel with you. She looks over him once. Your stamina is very impressive. Perhaps in time you might accept an invitation back to the manor. Barker says, Now why on earth would I ever go back there after last time? No, I will decline. I'm no fool. I don't want to see you again and hope I won't have to. Don't get in our way. Chaffer says, I don't know how much longer I can keep this up, Seals. My heart feels like it's going to burst. If I force the issue, I might be down for the dirt nap. He lights a cigarette and peers at the end of it. It might be better for me to punch out while I still can.
Tucker runs over to the now assembled group of agents. His movement and posture are strong, but the timing of his words is off, as if he's not fully focused. What's the situation? Where's the HP? He keeps a cautious distance from Cassandra, who he recognizes from a previous mission. Seals looks over at Tucker, giving a quick nod before saying, The situation is controlled, such as it is, but I have no idea where the HP is. I thought she was with you? He looks like he desperately wants to ask more questions, but gives a bit of a glare at Cassandra and stops talking. Barker eyes Cassandra briefly, then turns his attention to the agents. Tucker! You're back! Barker is holding a sword. If Barker is holding a sword, it means there was or will be a conflict. Tucker is the last to notice that Barker has been sliced, neatly and deeply, through his throat. This should have been a mortal wound, not the minor inconvenience Barker seems to be experiencing. The situation changed. Has anyone seen the HP since we went inside? Tucker asks as he notices Barker. Shit! You okay? Barker takes off his sunglasses and walks over, then stops briefly and pats his neck as Tucker notices it. He says, Oh, don't mind it. Little scruff with the Domingos, lifting the sword briefly. But it's under control. The HP? No, I... She was with you, wasn't she? She got out? Blast it! Barker quickly turns around in hopes of spotting the HP, any sign of it, before it's too late. Seals says, I haven't seen her, no. Noticing that Tucker seems a little off, Seals asks, Are you okay? What's an HP? Cassandra asks, still standing there in front of the agents in her golden dress. She seems a little lost now that the action has died down. A few stragglers appear to block the agents, but their health and numbers make such efforts impossible. She pulls the mask back on quickly. Never mind, she mutters sourly before unmasking herself again. It means hoi polloi, says Chaffer sarcastically. The masses, the great unwashed. The people you and that pretentious husband of yours prefer to avoid. Chaffer grinds his cigarette with his shoe. Why don't you do us all a favor and saw it off? Done and done, Cassandra says, trying to remain dignified as her cheeks and ears flare red. She fully dons her mask to hide her embarrassment. A heretofore unseen Park Ward limousine, driven by her stern-faced husband, picks her up and speeds back towards the heights. You're a sight for sore eyes, Tucker, says Chaffer. What next? You too, Tucker replies. Glad to see you survived our friends in one piece. The next move is completing the primary. Find the HP and do what we do. The little black hand on Barker's watch-like device has cut a swath across two-thirds of its face. 20. Above, the sky has attained a deep golden amber. A coffee-colored sun casts everything in burnt sienna like an old-time film. Chaffer says, Fair enough. If your guts are telling you that this bird is somewhere in the vicinity of the zoo, perhaps we should spread out and start searching for her. Chaffer's jaundiced eyes slither upward and stare at the oddly colored sky. I'm not sure how much good I'll do. My heart is going to burst if I escalate much further. One or two of you blokes might have to do some of the heavy lifting. Barker notices a peculiar blur out of the corner of his eye. One of the personalities, an older gentleman in brown coattails, stroking a fluffy white beard as he examines the various glass-encased displays within the zoo. A moment later, the man steps into a gaggle of sick, blathering personalities. A younger woman in a bonnet appears on the other side, still exhibiting the same telltale blur as she rushes past in the agent's periphery. Well, what do we have here? Chaffer flicks his eyes in the direction of the lady wearing the blue bonnet and watches her streak past. It looks like our HP has reared her head, lads. Perhaps we should move in on that bird before she does a runner. Good job, Barker, Tucker notes as he's already in motion, heading straight for the HP, signaling for the others to follow. As Barker's eyes follow it from one form to the next, it realizes the jig is up. Now the illusion of flesh evaporates, leaving something that is half-skinned human, half a botanical nightmare in its wake. It stares back at Tucker now with two reedy eye stalks as a fog of misty pheromones depletes around it. Shit, it concedes with what may be a shrug. Tucker, do we really have to do this? I saw what happens in that room. I've seen what we all look like. They won't let any of you out, even if you destroy me. The mist coalesces once more, briefly, as it takes on the visage of an older man in a black suit. It's Senior Instructor Snyder, saying, "Last time we had these agents inserted, they took out the HP and flew the coop. Haven't even escalated past 16, if what I read from the report is correct. They need to ride this one out," and quickly reverts back to monstrosity. Seals puts his hands in his pockets, staring at the HP with a grim fascination, a bit of incredulity visible in his eyes. "Is that just from static, or..." He mutters to no one in particular. He seems very hesitant to do anything. Tucker is flipping his device between his knuckles now. "So we're good at our job, and they have confidence in us this time as well. What's your point? We're free men, with the important job of handling things like you. You wouldn't have thought twice about killing me, given the opportunity. And when you get out, you'll be better, and society will have forgiven you. What's wrong with that? And once we're done here, we can leave. It's that simple. What would you have us do? Let you go? What do you think would happen then? Either another team of agents, probably more efficient and brutal than us, would be inserted, or else you might be written off as a lost cause. Your waking self detained and punished indefinitely. Is that really what you want?" Chaffer follows Tucker, placing his hand on his sidearm as he begins to move. Seals approaches a little closer, looking wary but curious. "What are you talking about, what happens in that room? What do you know that we don't? You seem to know what's going to happen to you, but..." He hesitates and falls silent, glancing at Tucker, somewhat like a dog that's expecting to be bopped with a newspaper. "At least that would give me a fighting chance. I didn't go nearly as hard on you as I could. Even now I'm holding back. Trust me," it says. "I know that she'll keep living on, but I will literally die. Even the good things she's done will die with me. You're erasing me. Don't I have a right to exist?" "Yeah, I've dreamed about it for years. Some kind of bottomless pit. A black, unending rift of nothingness swallowing me whole. Does that sound like something you'd want? I'd choose death over that. Besides, what does he know that he's not telling you?" it says, pointing an accusing and leafy appendage at Tucker. "This is bullshit." Seals sighs, rubbing his temples for a moment. "I agree. It is bullshit. But you know what position we're in? We're at the mercy of our superiors. They could pull the plug or inject lethal crap or decapitate us. Whatever it is they'd do. At the drop of a hat if they decided they didn't like us." He lights up a cigarette, his hands visibly unsteady. "And right now we're supposed to, like you say, erase you. If we don't do it, we're dead," he drawls around the cigarette. "At this point, I'm tired of thinking about it. It's just self-preservation. Look, I'm not going to hold it against you for doing what you have to do, because I can't hold it against myself either." He pauses, taking a deep, trembling breath, looking on the verge of some kind of breakdown. Then he tears his device off his jacket and lunges. Seals does not manage to pin the creature. At the last second, there is a sharp pain in the webbing between his thumb and forefinger. When his hand retracts, he is still holding the device, and a single maroon thorn has skewered him, Barker's watch nearly rips out of his jacket pocket on the way to 21. In the distance, the bodies line the streets. Men in brown wool greatcoats bearing gas masks and black gloves can be seen moving along the street, loading the dead on large trucks to be hauled elsewhere. Seals flails back, letting out a yell from the sudden pain, his cigarette going flying. He shoves his device in his pocket and stumbles back against a wall, instinctively gripping the wound as if that would make it any better. He seethes through his teeth in pain, his heart hammering in his chest as he resists the urge to just pull the thorn out, first examining the wound to see whether pulling out the thorn might be a bad, blood-fountaining idea. Of course, if it happens to look venomous, he pulls it out immediately. Tucker sighs and cricks his neck while the being talks. If we're erasing you, as far as you're concerned, and you'd rather die, the difference is nothing. Other than what happens to your shell. I find it interesting that you are so concerned with your right to exist when you utterly disregarded your victim's right to the same. What about their good deeds? As for how I feel about being swallowed by the lacuna, you and I both know that. Thanks for going easy on us and helping us out. I'm glad you were able to see the exhibit, and I think you could have been a decent person, except you chose not to be. That's the tragedy of all this. Between you and I, the device suddenly vanishes between Tucker's knuckles, and he lunges at the hostile, trying to banish her by surprise. Oh, come on! That's exactly what you did in the dr- The creature says, cut off by Tucker's lightning-fast reflexes. It slaps at the pin stuck to what approximates its sternum, as if the area had caught on fire. It unceremoniously vanishes. Seals discards the thorn and lets his hand drop to his side, sighing a little as the burning, throbbing sensation wears off much faster than expected. He looks at where the hostile was standing just a few seconds ago as he pauses for breath. That's it, huh? He asks, briefly giving his wounded hand another glance. Tucker says, that's it. Let's get out of here. He looks around at the assembled agents and at the trucks in the distance. He feels like crap. It's time to call it a job well done.
Greetings, Junior Agents. We're late, which is really just one of the many ways that Lacuna Slowburn realistically depicts a powerful, bureaucratic organization that answers to no one. There are a lot of benefits to operating with complete impunity, and one of those is making everyone work according to your schedule instead of the other way around. Imagine all the things you could do if there were no consequences to your actions. Let alone all the things you wouldn't have to do. Take that, Geneva Convention. So, you might be catching on that despite the company's apparent mission to rehabilitate subjects, there's a lot more going on under the surface. You'd think the ability to turn quote-unquote bad people into quote-unquote good people would be enough. Yet the mysterious employers who run the show are obviously up to more than whatever it says in the official brochure. Thankfully, this is only fiction. I'm sure all of our organizations, institutions, and corporations in the so-called real world are all mostly non-evil. I'm sticking to that statement in case I'm actually horribly wrong, so my actions won't have any unforeseen consequences. There might be unforeseen consequences for you too, listeners, unless you support this and other projects at Patreon. Join us as we expand our influence over the unsuspecting masses. You'll get access to all my classified materials and a bunch of stuff I made up, because let's be honest, it's all the same thing, really. Discover what the public just isn't ready to know.
Experience the thrill of fictionally endangering yourself on a daily basis. Enjoy a constant state of paranoia with none of the calories. Get bonuses, exclusive materials, early releases, live broadcasts, and more at patreon.com/donfathom. That's DonFathom. We're on social stuff too. Check it all out. We're Midnight Police on YouTube, TikTok, and X. We also have a Facebook group with the same name. We're on Threads too, though we're not sure what it really does yet. On Instagram, we are The Midnight Police. That is The Midnight Police. Get it right. You've been warned. This week's episode was written by Don Fathom, Matt Kimmel, Ian Bloom, and entities that call themselves Older Cloud and Agent Seals. Today's episode was read by Don Fathom, Matt Kimmel, and Ian Bloom. Production, editing, sound effects, pretty much everything else was by me, Don Fathom. One day I'll put my sources in the show notes. Until then, you'll just have to guess. All content from Lacuna Part 1, Second Attempt is copyright Memento Mori Theatrics. All rights reserved and whatnot. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 license. Quick review, agents, that means you can copy and distribute Lacuna Slow Burn as long as you refrain from changing it or using it for commercial purposes, and give us appropriate credit. Otherwise, we'll send the Spider-Men after you, or something even worse.
Lawyers.
That's all for now, junior agents. Escape while you still can. Just kidding. It's already too late.